Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. I'm Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and this is going to be another digest episode, which includes four summaries of research articles in math education. Kelly Demergen will summarize an article from Educational Studies in Mathematics by Stefan Register, Reinke, Robinson, Pugalenthi, and Pugli. Then Joshua Pope will summarize an article from the Journal for Research in Mathematics Education by Faulkner, Stiff, Marshall, Neatfeld, and Crossland. Next, you'll hear Luella Lepott summarize an article from School Science and Mathematics by Brand, Glasson, and Green. And finally, I will give a brief summary of an article from Education Sciences by Amaros Poveda and Bernardes Gomez. And then I'll mention an open call for a special issue in Education Sciences. We're looking for work related to modest, incremental professional development for math teachers. But first up is Kelly.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kelly Demergen. I am a PhD student at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and today I will be summarizing an article authored by Michelle Steffen and co-authors titled, People Use Math as a Weapon, Critical Mathematics Consciousness in the Time of COVID-19. This article aims to explore whether students are aware of how mathematics can disenfranchise certain groups and how mathematical reasoning affects critical awareness. To do this, mathematical tasks focusing on interpreting social media messages related to COVID and police shootings were given to 15 teenage students in one-on-one interviews. The goal is to inspire the development of instructional innovations based on students' current reasoning. The theoretical framework of the study is rooted in the Critical Mathematics Education Program. This educational approach aims to foster two primary objectives. First, to encourage students to engage in critical reflection about mathematics, and second, to inspire critical mathematics agency. The concept of critical mathematics consciousness, hereon referred to as CMC, plays a central role in this perspective, emphasizing the role of mathematics in either oppressing or liberating marginalized groups in society. CMC includes three distinct forms of awareness. One, sociopolitical mathematics awareness, recognizing that mathematics is used to model and interpret the real world, and it can be used for decision-making at both individual and systemic levels. Two, ethical mathematics awareness, which is acknowledging that mathematics, while seemingly neutral, is influenced by the ethics and choices of individuals who use it. And three, communicative mathematics awareness, which is understanding that mathematical communication has the power to educate or miseducate society. The authors believe that CMC can be developed through instruction. They adapted Frary's levels of critical consciousness to create a framework for the growth of CMC. There are six constructs outlined in the article that are regarded as characteristics, not levels, of consciousness that individuals may exhibit in varying ways across different contexts. The characteristics range from intransitive, where there is a lack of critical thinking, to critical transitive consciousness, where individuals are empowered to consider and act on conditions related to broader systems that perpetuate inequity. These constructs help in understanding the different forms of students' awareness. The work presented in this article was conducted as the first step in a design research project that focuses on designing for privileged students' critical mathematics consciousness. Interviews were conducted primarily with students who identify as white to understand the CMC of adolescent students of privilege and determine viable contextual problems that may provoke CMC. The two tasks highlighted in this article are called It's Black and White and Corona Crisis. The purpose of the It's Black and White task was to examine how students use proportional reasoning to draw conclusions about a potentially prejudicial claim made on social media and to see if students know of the ways that mathematics can be used to manipulate the perceptions, emotions, and behaviors of the public. The Corona Crisis task was created to explore students' communicative mathematical awareness, where the researcher wanted to explore students' awareness of the ability of mathematics being used to manipulate society in positive and negative ways. So for the findings, in the black and white task, students exhibited differing levels of mathematical reasoning and sociopolitical mathematical awareness, which were influenced by their personal and mathematical backgrounds. These two aspects could either complement or hinder each other. Those with some sociopolitical mathematical awareness were more inclined to independently explore claims, while individuals with advanced proportional reasoning skills tended to arrive at critical conclusions, albeit with limited agency. On the other hand, Students lacking both these qualities neither have the desire nor the ability to investigate or analyze the claims and mathematical representations. In the Corona Crisis Task, the research team found that all students could apply and understand mathematics in this context. However, most students were skeptical of the accuracy of using mathematical data to predict virus behavior, which raises doubts about their confidence in mathematics' ability to model the real world effectively. Nearly all students acknowledge that people can manipulate society's actions by presenting mathematical data in different ways. In summary, the analysis of students' performance on the interview tasks provides valuable insights for designing instruction to cultivate CMC and privileged students. The Is Black and White task revealed more about students' sociopolitical mathematics awareness, although only a few exhibited critical thought and agency. In contrast, the Corona Crisis task appeared more relatable to students, which suggests that tasks where students see themselves in the data and feel influenced by its interpretation could serve as an effective starting point for instruction. Furthermore, the Corona Crisis task, which involves line graph interpretation, was more accessible for students compared to complex proportional reasoning needed in the It's Black and White task. Finally, students demonstrated critical mathematics consciousness in various ways, depending on the problem context, mathematical reasoning, and personal experiences. This implies that critical consciousness, including CMC, is context dependent and not a fixed level of awareness. This data-based approach provides a starting point for designing instructional materials to nurture students' critical mathematics consciousness.
Greetings. My name is Joshua Pope, and the article that I'm going to discuss today is Race and Teacher Evaluations as Predictors of Algebra 1 Placement by Valerie Faulkner, Lee Stiff, Patricia Marshall, John Netfield, and Kathy Crosland. It was published in the Journal of Research in Mathematics Education. This article examines the conflict between placing black and white students in an advanced class, Algebra 1, in the eighth grade. Algebra 1 is typically a course that many students take in high school, so taking it in eighth grade makes it an advanced class, and it can have some significant benefits for students in high school and college. The reading inspects how test scores and teacher evaluations impacts the odds for black and white students being placed in Algebra 1 in the eighth grade. It argues, based on some data, that black students have less of a chance to be placed in Algebra 1 than white students in the eighth grade. It talks about how teacher evaluations are a significant barrier for black students getting placed in Algebra 1 as compared to test scores. The reading does argue that test scores are more significant than teacher evaluations and recommendations when it comes to equality for all students. Another significant finding discussed in the article is how tracking creates major inequalities for many underrepresented minority students. It stressed the future implications of taking Algebra 1 in high school. Taking advanced math classes in middle school could have a major impact on achievement in high school and college. It also stated that students that don't take Algebra 1 in eighth grade are not likely to take advanced math classes in post-secondary school. It also points out that the largest demographics of students that are afforded the opportunity to take those advanced classes are white males and Asian males from middle to high socioeconomic statuses. The article also contends that once a student is on a low track in high school, it is very difficult to address that course trajectory once they're in high school. In other words, once they're on the high track, they stay on the high track. And once they're on the low track in math, they stay on the low track. It admits that the course pathway starts in middle school and is heavily influenced by the courses that a student takes before entering high school, especially math. It discusses how important elementary school teachers are because they often make recommendations for students that are getting ready to attend middle school. So in other words, success in math in college and high school is heavily influenced by what classes students are taking coming into sixth grade, or when they're about 11 or 12. The findings from the article also mention that even when some black students have good grades and did well on tests, they were still excluded from the advanced math classes. The theory used to inform this study is implicit theory based on critical race theory. Implicit theory incorporates making decisions that may be subconscious rather than conscious. critical race theory intertwines with implicit theory when those decisions may be based on race or racism. This study examines making decisions about placing black and white students in an advanced class rather than using possible unbiased methods. It compares the difference between self-fulfilling prophecy and perceptual bias. Self-fulfilling prophecy occurs when a teacher's beliefs have a direct impact on a student's performance. Perceptual bias is found when a teacher's beliefs have an impact on their teacher's own evaluation of a student. In the reading, when it speaks of implicit theory, the framework, the authors aren't exactly saying that negative teacher evaluations of a student is a conscious decision of racial prejudice. Instead, the authors are saying that some are implicit beliefs about students. This belief is based on the third framework that was mentioned, perceptual biased framework. To tie all that together, the teacher recommendations that impact students theoretically are the teacher's beliefs and expectations of students, which in turn has a major impact on a student being placed in Algebra 1.
Hello, my name is Loella Lapat. I am a doctoral student at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. This is a summary of an article by Brenda R. Brand, George E. Gleason, and Andre M. Green from Virginia Tech, titled Socio-Cultural Factors Influencing Students' Learning in Science and Mathematics, an Analysis of the Perspectives of African American Students, published by the School of Science and Mathematics in 2006. This ethnographic study delves into how sociocultural factors impact the educational experiences of African American students in science and mathematics. It highlights their underrepresentation and struggles, exploring the complexities influencing their academic paths. The study points to the noticeable scarcity of African American students in science and mathematics and their continuous underachievement. National assessment data paints a concerning picture, showcasing persistent achievement gaps between different racial groups. They discuss the focus on standardized tests and improvements in the curriculum to address these educational issues, but highlight that these overlook the substantial influence of sociocultural factors on these students' learning experiences. The concept of border crossings becomes painfully meaningful as it illustrates how minority students navigate cultural differences upon entering the science and mathematics classrooms, often feeling like insiders or outsiders. The hidden curriculum, comprised of social norms and biases, significantly impacts students' confidence, self-perception, and contributions in these subjects. In this research, the team interviewed 5 African American students, 3 males, Jeff, Keith, and Gregory, and 2 females, Leslie and Tasha. The study used a sociocultural framework to interpret their experiences and perspectives. The interviews focused on their course choices, experiences in classes, preferred learning environments, college majors, and ideas for enhancing minority representation in these subjects. The findings unveiled the struggles these students faced with negative stereotypes influencing their experiences in science and math classrooms. These stereotypes hindered their self-esteem, and there was a prevailing perception that these subjects were reserved for specific individuals, discouraging minority students from pursuing careers in these fields. Moreover, the impact of student-teacher relationships was significant. Students expressed concern that their teachers' perceptions aligned with negative stereotypes, affecting their academic performance. They highlighted the crucial need for positive teacher-student relationships for acceptance and confidence in their abilities. The study indicated that African American students encouraged challenges related to negative stereotypes, teacher perceptions, and their own self-esteem, influencing their experiences and performances in these classes. It emphasized the importance of understanding and addressing these sociocultural influences for better educational outcomes. The students participating in college-bound programs or receiving encouragement from significant individuals managed to navigate these challenges. However, their discussions echoed external issues and were challenging to negotiate, including negative stereotypes, guarded relationships with teachers, and perceptions of teachers holding negative feedbacks. Teachers played a pivotal role in helping students combat stereotypes and establish their self-worth. The study referred to not learning as a response to perceived racism and sexism, highlighting the influence of teachers as gatekeepers to resources and legitimacy. Furthermore, the research emphasized the impact of symbolic violence, subtly excluding individuals from fields like science and mathematics. The Western construct, representing scientists and mathematicians as white, male, Eurocentric, discouraged certain individuals' participation. Conclusively, this study underscored the challenge educators face in minimizing the impact of societal socialization processes on minority students' school experiences. It emphasized the need for an effective learning environment that validates student participation, urging teachers to critically understand societal influences on students' learning to shape a more inclusive learning environment.
This is Sam again, and I'm going to summarize the article, EduTuber and Gender in STEM. And that EduTuber is like YouTuber. And that's by Lucia Amoros Poveda and Abraham Bernardes Gomez. This article is motivated by the ongoing and worldwide underrepresentation of women in STEM fields like science and mathematics. The authors point out that there has been a lot of focus by policymakers, economists, and various researchers on the relatively low number of women pursuing careers in STEM, but they argue that it's also important to look at the representations of experts and public communicators about STEM. The public faces of STEM can be an important factor in how young people become interested in pursuing science or math. Amoros Poveda and Bernardes Gomez then focused their research specifically on YouTubers, or EduTubers, because this is how many young people explore topics and share information. The main question of this article has to do with the representation of men and women in science and math videos on YouTube. And they note right away that one limitation of these videos is that they tend to operate along the gender binary, rather than making space for trans or non-binary scientists and mathematicians. And I'll comment on that again in a moment. But their main results had to do with analyzing the presence of men and women in YouTube videos. The authors are located in Spain, so this work is based on how YouTube plays and what plays in Spanish YouTube channels. But to me, it seems like the findings will hold true in general, although the specific percentages will certainly vary from country to country. They identified 41 relatively popular YouTube STEM channels, focusing on those that are geared toward explaining STEM content via the so-called EduTubers. The main finding that stood out to me is that a whopping 73% of the STEM YouTube channels were led by a man, either a male voiceover or a male central character on screen. There were only 12% of the STEM channels that had a woman lead. And then there were about 15% that had some sort of blend of men and women leading the channel. So I was trying to think about those numbers in context, and I've seen statistics in the range of like 30 or 35% of STEM professionals being women. So the fact that the YouTube numbers are only 12% women, or at most 27% women, is troubling, especially if the authors are correct that such videos might exert an influence on the next generation. But it gets even worse the closer you look. Amoros Poveda and Bernardes Gomez also looked at hyperlinks from those YouTube channels to other STEM YouTubers. The women YouTubers did a fairly decent job. They linked to other women 23% of the time, so that's over-representative as compared to the 12% number of the original women-led STEM channels. In other words, the women were linking to women about twice as often as you'd expect by chance. But the men, oh, those men, at least the ones in the study, they linked 100% to other men. So that's 0% links from men sending traffic toward women-led STEM channels. Come on, guys, we've got to do better. And yes, I realize that I'm a man doing a STEM-related podcast right now, but at least I'll have many women on as guests. Another way that it gets worse is when you consider the focus of the women's channels. Those channels were mainly about biology topics, love and attraction studies, cosmetic experiments, and some book reviews or tips about writing in STEM. The men, on the other hand, were posting videos about a full range of sciences, as well as pure and applied mathematics. So the authors point out that not only are women underrepresented in the STEM YouTube space, but they also often fell into more stereotypically feminine categories of STEM, whereas men kind of manspreaded out all across STEM. In conclusion, I want to mention again a point that the authors brought up multiple times, which is that this analysis is based on the artificial gender binary of men and women, and that further consideration needs to be given to trans and non-binary gender representation in STEM. They point out that there are very strong communities online for trans networking and trans YouTube content, but that the STEM YouTube space is not yet inclusive of trans voices. Overall, this article just made me think more about how STEM is represented on YouTube and in social media. So it's not just about the classrooms or the universities and trying to make those spaces inclusive of women in STEM. It's also about the voices and the faces on social media and who gets to be the public representatives of science and mathematics. If you want to send in an article summary to be included in a future digest episode, aim for 4 to 5 minutes and send the audio file to ottensam@att.net. That's ottensam@att.net. And please put Math Ed Digest in the subject line. But thanks for those who submitted to this episode, and thank you for listening to this episode. That last summary that I did was an article from the journal Education Sciences. It's an open access journal with an international reach, and I'd like to let everyone know about a special issue of Education Sciences that is currently accepting manuscripts. It's edited by myself, along with Amber Candela and Zandra DiRaggio, and the special issue will focus on incremental and innovative approaches to professional development with math teachers. We've been working to clarify our own ideas about incremental PD, which is PD that's characterized by expecting only very small changes in instruction that are easy to incorporate. Instead of doing intense and extended PD around transformations in instruction, we want to collect ideas and attempts at small, modest, incremental PD. Although ambitious pedagogy is needed and might be our ultimate goal, we also need some instructional suggestions that can bring immediate change and that might spread far and wide, even to those hard-to-reach teachers. So if you have some work to share that fits within that scope, please consider submitting to our special issue in Education Sciences. We are open for submissions through August 31st, and I will put a link in the show notes.